Good morning. Would you please stand?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is a public comment period. Is there anyone out there in the public that would like to address the board this morning on anything not on the agenda? Okay, seeing no one. Okay, we'll go to the consent calendar. I'll need a motion. If you don't want to pull something up, I need a motion.
I'll move for approval of the consent calendar.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Motion by... Yeah. And second by DeMarcati. Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 5-0. Okay, the next thing will be B-12. Bridget, do you have something this morning for us? Is this a PowerPoint?
It is.
Okay, good.
Good morning, Chairman Mayfield and members of the Board of Supervisors, Birgit Flatiger, District Attorney. I actually will be combining items 12 and 13 so we can move through it fairly quickly, but if you have any questions, we'll be able to handle those.
Well, should I say 12 and 13 or do one at a time?
We should do one at a time.
Do one at a time.
We'll start with the first one then. And that would be the real estate fraud report. Attached to the agenda this morning, you all have already received the actual report itself, and it's quite detailed and lengthy, but I'd like to hit some of the highlights. The real estate fraud program began as a result of Senate Bill 537, and in June of 2005, we began charging a $2 surcharge for the recording of documents in order to fund this particular program. The clerk recorder started collecting the fees on July 1st of 2005, and our unit began actually operating in January of 2006. By way of funding, in fiscal year 06-07, $184,000 was collected, and 5% of that is retained by the clerk recorder's office to cover their costs and fees. If you contrast that with 05-06, you can see that there was a dramatic reduction in the amount of money that was taken in. That's as a result, obviously, of the real estate crisis that we've been all facing.
Oh, we're okay now.
Okay. The real estate fraud unit is staffed by currently Deputy District Attorney Marlisa Ferreira. I'd like to introduce her to you. She's handling the PowerPoint this morning. She's been on board with this program the entire 2 years. She will soon be replaced by Deputy District Attorney W.R. McKenzie, who is not here, but is in court this morning. He'll be taking over from Marlisa, and there'll be a training transition period there. She's done an excellent job of getting the program rolling, and she's handled many, many cases which are very, very complicated. She'll be holding on to some of those because to turn them over to another prosecutor would really sort of be unfair. Additionally, one of our criminal investigators who is with the program since the beginning, Rich Allen, has taken a job with the Sacramento District Attorney's Office as an investigator. So we are bringing in another investigator. So there's been a change in the unit. That will be criminal investigator Mark Smith. We have a part-time criminal investigator, and that's Glenn Gully. And Glenn is in the audience this morning, and he's been a real asset to the division. As you can imagine, since we are the only agency within the county who's doing any of this investigation, it's a heavy burden. There are a lot of cases, and it's really our folks who've had to develop the expertise to handle them. Your local police departments just don't have the personnel and the expertise to do this kind of investigation. In 2007, there was a dramatic uptick in the number of cases that were reported to us and complaints. We had 111 complaints alleging fraud during 2007. Of those, 24 of them were investigated but determined to be unfounded, had insufficient evidence for us to prosecute, or complainants failed to follow through with us. 11 complaints were determined to be civil in nature, so not appropriate for criminal prosecution. Another 11 complaints resulted in criminal charges being brought and filed against a total of 25 separate defendants. These are cases which continue to be active within the system. Another 74 complaints are in the investigative phase, so it's a very long, drawn-out process. One of our cases actually was of such a nature that we referred it to the FBI for follow-up and investigation and federal prosecution. The victim monetary loss, again, this is an uptick from last year. I think it was about $5 million loss at the last report. We're estimating approximately $17 million in losses to victims in 2007. Cases of interest for us, there are a number of different scams, if you want to call it that. There's a case that involves an equity foreclosure buyout scheme. We've had mortgage fraud and elder financial abuse. A lot of the cases we have, unfortunately, it's not strangers who are doing the activity. It's actually family members taking advantage of family members, which is really unfortunate. And we also have cases dealing with predatory lending. This year, the members of the Real Estate Fraud Unit have been very, very active in terms of getting out into the community and doing presentations. In the report itself, you can see a whole bunch of presentations that they've done, the number of folks that have been in attendance. So these are community presentations. An area of special focus this year as compared to last year was reaching out to real estate agents and brokers, as well as title industry and mortgage professionals. And they made some major presentations through SEPA to really make contact with the elderly community within the county. So here's just a handful of the cases of the presentations that they did. PMZ Realty had an annual training, so over 300 agents were in attendance and were trained by Marlies and the other members of the unit on what to look for and how to avoid participating or being involved in consciously or, you know, not even realizing it in some sort of fraudulent activities. The Safe Banking Seminar was geared towards seniors, and there were 300 seniors in attendance. And then also, as you can see, presentations to other realty groups, Kiwanis, Lions, and other public service groups. We get a number of thank you notes, as you can see. There's one from a victim, and then here's a letter from SEPA thanking us for the presentations that we've done and the education that's been provided in the past year. Goals for 2007, these were last year's goals, and that was development of a courtesy notice that would be sent to owners of record upon the filing of any change of ownership. We're collaborating with the clerk recorder to try and implement that. We have found that there are instances where some of the folks that are doing some fraudulent activity are able to change title, and those folks living in the houses do not even know it's occurred. So if there's an automatic process where any kind of documents filed which affects the title, if that goes out automatically to the owner of the property, they'll know weeks, months, even a year ahead of time compared to what they're currently realizing. The other goal for us was to increase public awareness of fraud schemes, and as you can see, we've accomplished that, and that is an ongoing priority for us, because if we can educate folks and prevent them from being victims, that's far easier for us than trying to investigate and prosecute after the fact. Goals for 2008, we'd like to maintain and strengthen the Northern California Real Estate Fraud Task Force. That's mentioned in the reports in multi-jurisdictional quarterly meeting of real estate fraud investigators and prosecutors. These are, again, primarily people from district attorney's offices from as far south as Kern all the way north to the border. We implemented this program. We've had the initial kickoff meeting. It was even in our offices. It's a great way to share resources, share ideas, share intelligence, because a lot of these individuals who are doing the more complicated fraud schemes are doing them across county lines. So it's a highly effective tool. We'd also like to coordinate with CDAA, which is the California District Attorneys Association, to pursue legislative enhancements to the government code section that provides for the funding, because the $2 funding, it needs to be increased because it's just not covering the cost. And in addition, we would like to continue educating the public, as I've stated, and industry professionals to have a greater impact here within the county. All right, that kind of wraps it up for the real estate fraud. It's a synopsis of what you've received in writing. If you have any specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them or turn to Marlisa Ferreira, who can give you an overview if you're interested at all in terms of what she has experienced and what she views as the bigger problems or some ways to deal with them, the real estate fraud problem here in Stanislaus County. So,
do you have any questions this morning?
I do, Mr. Chairman. It just concerns the courtesy notice that you're trying to get implemented here. I see the staff report says that other counties are doing this now. This is something you expect to get done, say, by the end of this year? Or
I would like to. I'm going to turn it over to Marlies and have her address that.
Yes, we've actually began meeting with the clerk recorder's office as well as title industry professionals.
which we believe is going to continue to occur to discuss these issues. We had one such meeting about a month and a half ago, 6 weeks ago or so, and we believe that the ongoing conversations with the clerk recorder's office will enable us to do this by the end of the year.
How can somebody change the title of property without the owner knowing it?
It's actually a very simple process. It was surprising to me as well. Basically, the grant deed, you can get a grant deed form just about anywhere off the internet or from any real estate brokerage house, and you fill out the grant deed. If you you get a notary to sign off on the bottom of it, you forge the person's name who currently owns title to that property and pay the notary off. There's no system in place at the time of recording to check ownership. Basically, once, and it's not up to the recorder's office to do so. So basically, that's all that needs to occur before title changes hands to a predator. And this goes on a lot. We see it with family members, and the documents recorded, mailed back to the perpetrator as opposed to the rightful owner. And the rightful owner at this current time has no notice of it.
I didn't realize.
How about we throw a notary in jail?
Yeah, what happens to him when you catch him?
Of him or her?
How about her?
And that's a very good point. We are one of the few counties in the state of California, having talked to my colleagues throughout the state, that file against notaries. And in fact, we filed against such notaries recently in a number of cases. I won't go into the details of it, but we are pursuing notaries and notary violations. We have a very good relationship with the Secretary of State to develop information on notaries, to obtain information regarding notaries quickly. They're part of our Northern California Task Force, which is wonderful. So we've forged those relationships now to be able to do that, and we are pursuing them actively.
What does that mean, you're pursuing it, you're filing it?
We're filing.
What does that mean?
Filing charges.
Filing charges? Have you completed any? What has been the decisions? Is it just a slap on the hand? What is the penalty that's paid?
Generally, notary violations in most cases are government code violations, and they're generally misdemeanors. There are some cases, if you can show that the notary was an aider and abettor in the underlying felony, that you can actually charge felony violations. One such case that we have filed where the notary was implicated and charged in the same complaint with the active perpetrators, we did resolve for a misdemeanor with restitution and other...
Aren't there notaries repulsed?
Sorry?
Aren't their authority as a pulled?
Yes,
notary?
Secretary of State.
For how long?
Licenses are pulled. They can be pulled forever. That's an administrative process through the Secretary of State. What we do collaborate with the Secretary of State in efforts to have that occur, also with the Department of Real Estate for industry professionals.
Because they do periodically check all the notaries' books to see if they've signed in and et cetera,
yes.
Names and et cetera.
And along those lines, there's been new law that's recently been passed regarding our access to notary books. There's a new law in process now that allows us to actually review a notary book without having obtained a search warrant, which helps us to pursue our investigations in a quicker fashion. So that's been helpful. That just came up in the last year, as a matter of fact. So we are in the business of pursuing notaries who are involved in these kind of crimes.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
And I just had a little bit more. I don't know if this is to a district attorney or county council, but the Senate bill of 537 allowed us to surcharge each transaction with $2, which funds, I guess, a good part of your program. Is that $2 just locked in? Is that the maximum amount?
You know, there's actually discussion about amending that legislation. I'll let Marlise update you on where it's at right now.
Yes, it's currently actively in the Assembly. It's been through some of the judicial committees now, and it's been approved. There's no opposition currently in the State Assembly to it, and it looks like it's going to pass, and it looks like it's going to up the charge now to $4 per recorded document, which is drastically needed because, as you know, with the current crisis in the real estate market and the industry now, the number of recordings has diminished over the last 18 months to 2 years because of the current crisis and the number of foreclosures that are going on. And because of that diminishing recording of documents, our income is going to go down in this unit. So CDAA was it took an active role along with some real estate prosecutors in the state to amend that government code section to up that amount to $4.
The problems with real estate frauds increasing, the revenue is going down because of less transactions. If there was ever a time we needed a real estate fraud unit, it'd be now.
Yeah,
I agree.
Okay. If there's no more, I need a motion to accept this.
I'll move to accept the report.
Okay. I'll second it.
It's been moved by Dean Martini and second by Jeff Grover. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now you can do 14.
And that's the consumer fraud report.
Oh, no, 13. 13. I'm
all right. Go ahead.
I caught myself.
You did. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The staffing in this unit, we have a deputy district attorney by the name of John Goulart, who is our full-time consumer fraud prosecutor. He's unable to be here today. He's got a commitment with family. But his supervisor is here, and that's Chief Deputy Dave Harris. So if we have specific questions, he may be able to answer them. The unit is also staffed by a criminal investigator, Mike Hermosa. We got him from the Modesto Police Department when he retired. He's got prior experience investigating fraudulent activity, so he's a real benefit to us. And we have a paralegal who's also working in the consumer fraud cases. In the report that you have in front of you, it's quite lengthy. Mr. Goulart did a fine job of running down virtually all of his cases, I think. I'm just going to highlight a couple of them. Civil cases here, again, no specifics because they're currently in litigation and pre-filing negotiations. But this is a case initiated by Stanislaus County's Weights and Measures Program back in 2006. And we're currently meeting with major corporations and other DA's offices who joined this action to achieve a stipulated judgment with injunctive relief, penalties, and costs. So that's an ongoing case. We are moving forward. It obviously takes longer because the more attorneys you get involved, just the longer it takes. There's also a home improvement retailer case, again, initiated by our local Weights and Measures in 2004. Negotiations continue with the retailer, and four other counties have joined. So we're, again, working on a stipulated judgment, injunctive relief, penalties, and costs. Criminal cases, you'll see there are many of them, and you may have noticed we've done a lot of press releases. A number of these actually have been posted in the Modesto Bee. The first case was mentioned in the presentation we did for you last year. It was an open pending case at that time. The case has now been resolved, and this individual, Joseph Elliott, has been sentenced to 5 years in state prison for three different cases, primarily dealing with diversion of construction funds. He would promise to do these home renovation projects, take the money, and not complete the projects. And there were financial elder abuse charges as well. Another criminal case deals with the Bureau of Automotive Repair. They assisted us. They participated in the investigation. And these were instances where the defendants were conducting unnecessary repairs and billing for work that was not done. So there's a whole spectrum for consumer fraud kinds of cases, civil, criminal, and then going to the next slide, other investigations. There are two Cal OSHA cases, again, highlighted in your written report. One dealing with Hershey Chocolate, where there's a violation of Cal OSHA rules that led, according to our investigation, to a worker losing her arm when a machine was activated while she was cleaning it. There's another Cal OSHA violation dealing with Seneca Foods, where a forklift driver was killed when a large pallet of cardboard fell on top of him. So those are ongoing cases for us. In the future, we'd like to continue our partnership with Weights and Measures. It's been very productive, very helpful. We work quite well with them. They're doing more investigative work. And we'd like to continue the partnership with other DA's offices. These are huge, massive, civil-type cases. And generally speaking, one DA's office alone just can't handle it. So we bring in experts from other counties that have had consumer fraud programs going on for years. This is just starting our second year, really, of activity. So the association is quite fruitful for us. We view this as an invaluable protection for the community, for businesses, and for consumers to make sure that everybody's doing the job they need to be doing it. So that's sort of a wrap-up of the report, which is a little bit longer. And again, any questions at all?
Any questions?
You said that there was no revenue received this year, but yet the report shows various fines of several thousand dollars for quite a few cases you prosecuted, but Did the revenue not go to the district attorney's office?
Right, those are fines that are imposed pursuant to the criminal statutes, penal code, those kinds of things, and those go to basically the courts and the state under the law. We don't get those. We only get the fines and penalties assessed as part of negotiations in the civil cases primarily, and some of the Cal OSHA violations.
Could you expect that you would get some of the fines in your office? I'm surprised there was nothing for the whole year.
Well, you know, with all the fines that are imposed on all the criminal defendants, it would sure be nice if some of those were routed to district attorney's offices, but they aren't. They go other places. I do fully expect in the coming year that we will see some negotiated cases and see some revenue coming in. I fully expect that in significant numbers. I'm optimistic.
Excuse me, is the route of the fines, the manner in which, is that controlled by legislation?
It is.
Okay. Have you contacted our legislators on the possibility?
You know, I can bring it up with CDA. There's a conference coming up very soon, but a lot of that money is earmarked and goes to very specific places. A lot of it finds its way back to the probation department, for example, state courts, security for the courts. And there's a little bit, when you think about it, it almost seems a little inappropriate that you have a prosecutor that files charges and there's a requirement that the defendant who we're prosecuting pay us. That just can seem a little unseemly.
Well, what is your suggestion into addressing the expenditures? Do you have any idea how we can address this issue?
Well, I do, and that's the cases that we're continuing to prosecute, and we really believe in the coming year that we're going to see some resolutions of those, these are the civil cases, which, as part of negotiated dispositions, there are fines and penalties which are directly permitted under the law to come to the district attorney's office or to the general fund, and so that's what we're working on.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? If not, we need a motion. Would you like to move? Okay, move down there. How about you, Bill? Like,
sure, I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Very powerful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next one we have B-14. That would be the approval of Sansall County 20-year transportation plan. Okay. Dan, you're going to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairman Mayfield, board members, Mr. Robinson, and Mr. Doring. And my name is Stan Reisen. I'm Assistant Executive Officer in the Chief Executive Office. And I'm here this morning to request your approval of the Stanislaus County 20-year countywide transportation financial expenditure plan. As you're aware, officials from the 9 cities in the county have been working with the Stanislaus Council of Governments on the preparation of a half-cent transportation sales tax measure for the November 2008 ballot. A key step in this process is the preparation of a plan that would outline how the proceeds from the sales tax would be spent. That plan is referred to as a financial expenditure plan. Now, the first step in preparing the financial expenditure plan was the establishment of an apportionment methodology for the proceeds. Our Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Robinson, played a vital leadership role in this step, working with the 9 city managers to gain consensus on the sharing methodology that all the cities in the county could support. That methodology gave each agency a sense of what their share of the sales tax proceeds would be. Based on this amount, each agency was asked to prepare a plan outlining how they would spend those proceeds in their respective communities. At your March 18, 2008 board meeting, you approved Stanislaus County's portion of that financial expenditure plan. Our portion designated 50% for capital projects, including congestion relief and bridge projects, and 50% for roadway resurfacing projects. We are now before you to request your approval of the final financial expenditure plan, which incorporates projects from the other 9 cities as well as the county. At this point, I'd like to introduce Vince Harris, Executive Director of StanCog, who would like to say a few words about the plan.
Thank you, Stan, Mr. Chairman, and members. Good morning. I'm Vince Harris, Executive Director for the Stanislaus Council of Governments. Actually, Stan's done a pretty good job in terms of where we are with the plan. Just for additional information, as this body, I'm sure, is aware, in order for this item to be placed ultimately on the ballot, it requires approval by a majority of the population, but a majority of the cities representing a majority of the population in Stanislaus County. We have been engaged in going before each city council here in the county. Currently, we have seen every city council other than Patterson and Oakdale. We are going to Patterson tonight, and we'll be in Oakdale on July 7th. At this point, we in fact have obtained the required legal requirement in terms of population base, but clearly we'd like to have a unanimous vote of all the cities, so we will be going to the last two cities. Stan has laid out basically the basic provisions of the plan. The plan is a half-cent sales tax, estimated to generate about $700 million over 20 years. The program is basically composed of two basic plans, or two basic elements. One is called the Local Traffic Improvement and Road Maintenance Program. Stan described that in terms of the sharing amongst each of the jurisdictions, including the county. The other portion or element of the program, in fact, is the regional capital corridors, which we have identified three corridors. One we call the Northern Corridor, the Central Corridor, and the Southern Corridor. Those three corridors all total are estimated to obtain 49% of the revenues. As Stan indicated, the local program will take half the revenues, or 50%, estimated at approximately $350 million. The last 1% is for administration under the law, which is allowed to administer this program. With that, I'll turn it back to Stan and be available to answer any questions that members might have.
So it's our recommendation today that you approve the financial expenditure plan, which will outline how the proceeds from the sales tax would be spent. It's our anticipation that once the STANCOG Policy Board has approved the plan and approved placing this on the ballot, that we would be back before you in August to ask that you formally place this on the ballot. That concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Is there any questions?
I'd like to move approval.
Second. Are we going to have a discussion brought back to the board? I don't have questions, but I have comments.
No, go right ahead and make your comment.
Okay, first of all, I have been in favor of the half-cent tax on transportation and have been involved with STANCOG and other groups in trying to address this. I also want to thank the services of our executive, Mr. Robinson, because without him, this could have never been put together. And the county has made contributions to the city in order to make this work. So my comments, I want to be thoroughly understood, is that I am in favor of this, although I have a very difficult situation that I believe the process is not correct. Now, at STANCOG, a decision was made because of difference of opinion by board members that we would not spend any money for a survey. But at the time, it also was discussed that if we had a survey, if they did a survey, it would be brought to us so we know that if we have enough interest and votes in order to carry out the bond issue, or that perhaps it would be advantageous to delay it. Now, since it was done outside of the STANCOG's money and others, money was appropriated through some means, and a survey was taken. A week ago, today, I asked a member on this board if I may see that. Yesterday, I had not received any phone call or notifications of a meeting. I also was aware that STANCOG was having a meeting last night and to address the principles of the bond issue. I did not attend because I thought the process was not proper. I believe that those who are asked to make the decision of whether or not we do this should be entitled to the information to see the pros and the cons. So I did not attend last night's meeting. I had an appointment to speak with one on it yesterday, the timetable didn't work out and I had to leave to go to another appointment. I received the phone call and the gentleman showed up with the survey, and I told my secretary to ask him if we run a copy and leave it and I would study it. I was told that that survey would not go out of his hand and he would not give me a copy. Today, the subject was brought up, and I was told once again, no one is going to get a copy of that survey. It is very disturbing to me that the board is asked to make a decision whereby they are not furnished with the full information to evaluate the survey. And one of the things I'm concerned about is a push poll. A push poll is a poll that the questions are written in such a manner that in most cases people will agree with it. I've seen many things where push polls have been used. I'm not saying it is a push poll, but I want to be able to verify it and discuss it. When things are brought before this board, the board members have received the information and the studies on the subject we are asked to make a decision upon. And we are given that information with sufficient time to study and review. It is beyond my comprehension that anyone would ask this board of supervisors to make a decision to go forward without providing that information and being able to study and absolutely refusing to do it. I am for this, but I am against the process, and I will not vote for this. My fellow supervisors will make their own decision, but I believe that if they vote for it, this is one of the first times the board members would be making on a vote where they were not given the full information to make an evaluation. And that is my objection to this B14.
Well, before we have the vote, then maybe somebody can answer this. I mean,
I'd be glad to speak to it.
Okay.
Yeah. I made the offer to all of our board members that I could share the results of the survey in a separate meeting, but that we would not be photocopied. I don't even have a copy of the survey. All I have is a compilation of the results. I've made arrangements for Senator Monteith to meet with some of the folks that do have not only all of the answers to the results, but all of the questions and all the crosstabs. So that can take place at his convenience at some point in time. It's unfortunate that we weren't able to meet during this last week. I was out of town from Wednesday until yesterday morning. And so I apologize for that inability to meet. I think the issue here that we're discussing, though, is the expenditure plan and the approval of the expenditure plan, not the campaign, which the county nor Stancog can participate in the advocacy of the campaign for this. And so that has to be completely separate. All we can deal with is establishing the ballot language, establishing the expenditure plan, and providing an educational campaign, which Stancog is underway with. And I believe that's what they talked about last night. It had nothing to do with the advocacy part of the campaign, which is yet to take place after the board, if the board does decide to put this on the ballot. So I think we've got multiple issues that we're dealing with here, and this is not related to the campaign.
I disagree with that comment. I also feel this is the type of thing that, as far as the public is concerned, does not give us credibility. It does have to do with what was discussed. If this was not presented to us in its full form, so that we know what's happening, where the public is and all, why should we pass to proceed with it? And I believe that regardless who owns the survey, that they would be more than willing to talk to those who they are asking to make a decision so whereby it can be carried on. It definitely has something to do with it. And I believe this is what creates problems where we are not able to get bonds passed, because this is a lack of credibility to the public.
Let me ask this then. Today we're just talking about how the money is going to be spent. Today, are you asking us, just to ask us, how the money is to be spent?
Chairman, yes. Essentially, we're asking you to approve the spending plan, which we call the financial expenditure plan. Now, there was a recommendation on here to notify the clerk recorder of intent. That is entirely discretionary. That recommendation could be pulled. That would have just allowed staff to begin working with the registrar of voters on some of the details of what would be involved in the ballot.
So
it's not critical to...
Okay, the second part you're talking about is not so much to move ahead, I mean, to put the vote on to the people, just the expenditure plan.
That is the key element today.
Okay, talk to us.
Just a little additional clarity to what Mr. Rison said. This item comes with three recommendations. The first is to approve the county 20-year countywide transportation financial expenditure plan. The second is the adoption of the resolution approving the transportation financial expenditure plan. And then third part, which is the discretionary component, is the approval for staff to begin working with the county clerk and recorder. That could be removed so that you wouldn't be granting explicit authority for the county staff to begin working with the clerk recorder's office on timing and language and the other elements precedent to placing an item on the agenda. But it is item number 3 is purely discretionary. It could be removed from this item.
Why don't we pull, in case there's such a discussion up on the board today, why don't we pull the third part and address the expenditure, which it seems like most of the cities have approved. Okay, but as far as putting it on the ballot then?
We'll be back.
Okay, give us the information that Dixfield, he hasn't got the information.
Wait a minute.
Okay, so then let's get the information, and quite truthfully, if there's a poll, we're the ones going to put it on the ballot. Did you say we can see the poll?
I said I made this offer to each of you individually last week that if you were interested, I'd be glad to sit down with you and go over what I know about it.
Okay.
There are people that have things that's a lot more than what I know.
Okay, but can we see the poll?
Absolutely.
Okay. As long as we can see the poll, the third part, let's see the poll, then you can enter a conversation.
1 week ago, I asked Supervisor Grover to see that, and he said he would get it to me. Last week, it was a week. I then had to pursue to ask to see it once again. There was a problem in the timing, and I believe this board needs to not only see it, but we should have a copy to review it, investigate it, just like everything else. Why should this be any different than any other process we have in addressing issues in the county? If it is the responsibility of the Board of Supervisors to make a decision, why should there be an exception to that process today because some people don't want to show you or give you a copy? I have trouble with that.
Chairman Mayfield, I'd like to amend my motion to items 1 and 2, and we'll notify the clerk that we're considering this at some other time.
Okay.
I'll still second that, but I do have some comments.
Okay.
Myself, I've not seen a poll or gotten a summary results of any poll, but my decision to pursue this is based on the fact that this community needs it. Whether or not it polled high or not, I still think we need to continue moving forward with it. Supervisor, I wish you were that passionate at the StanCog meeting when we decided not to do a poll at StanCog. because I think we could have got through and everybody could have seen and designed the survey. You could have been happy with it and seen its results. It would have been a public document and all the rest.
We were told that at a poll would be done, the information would be given to us to make a decision if we'd go forward or not.
I don't recall that. I recall saying that the private sector is going to do a poll, but that was different and separate from Stancock. And that's what my recollection of it was. But again, I've yet to see a poll, but I'm convinced that this community needs the sales tax, and I'm pushing forward with it. So my second, okay.
I am not objecting to the poll. I've stated that I'm for it, but the process, I think, undermines the credibility of the people, and that the board is not being given the opportunity to have a true evaluation of the possibility of passing, not the fact that we need this. But the refusal to show the results of the poll indicating if the people are going to accept it or not accept it. I am not going to make a decision until I receive those facts.
Which is fine, but I haven't heard anybody refusing to.
Okay, it's been moved in a second. But Supervisor DeMartini would like to enter this discussion at some point.
Go ahead. I'd just like to make one comment, Mr. Chairman, that I would concur with Supervisor O'Brien that there are some valid reasons why this county could use the sales tax to better our transportation. Also, you know, this money would allow us to leverage state and federal money that we can't do right now. What's before us today is the financial expenditure program. And this is something that's been hammered out by our CEO with concurrence of probably going to be all nine of the cities, or seven of the nine already. And this is a fair expenditure plan. The cities actually came out a little better on this than the county, and I'm okay with that. But what's before us today is approval of the expenditure program and not a poll done by a private organization. So I intend to support this today.
But it also says, it's saying by pulling number three, that we're not okay to put this on the ballot yet. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so that will come when?
That will come in early
August.
Yes.
Okay, that will come in August. And the final decision will be that the people of this county, whether they're going to vote for it or not, that'll be totally up to them. As far as that part of the plan, is that if we move it, if at some point in August we do move it ahead, they'll be making the decision whether we move ahead or not as far as the plan goes. Okay, we have a motion before the board and a second. Motion by Jeff Grover, a second by Bill O'Brien. I'm forgetting these guys' names today. Anyway, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. 4-1. Well, thank you. And with that, now we go down to a correspondent.
This board has received a copy of the Turlock Irrigation District Annual Report 2007, Renewing the Vision.
I acknowledge the receipt of your report.
This board has received a copy of the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District 2008-09 Adopted Budget.
We'll acknowledge the receipt of the report.
This board has received a letter from the City of Ceres requesting support in designating the northern areas of the city that is currently in the 95351 zip code to be consolidated into the 95307 Ceres zip code.
Refer this to the Chief Executive Officer.
This board has received a letter from Indelex Aluminum Solutions updating their plans to discontinue and close their Modesto facility located at 4555 North Star Way, Modesto. The termination of employees is expected to take place beginning July 18, 2008, per the Worker Adjustment and Retaining Notification Act.
Refer this to the Alliance WorkNet and the SASOC Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a copy of the Report California Family PAC Program, County Successes and Challenges from the Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health.
I refer this to the Health Services Agency.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Officer and Risk Management Division. Is there any Board of Supervisors report? DeMartini?
None today, Mr. Chairman.
Any else? Okay, Bill O'Brien.
I got one, Mr. Chairman.
Well, that's great. Okay.
I took the district attorney's offer to spend some time with her in her office a couple weeks ago, and just want to report back that things look like they're going well over there, and the investment in technology is very important, I think, in the district attorney's office in order to handle the caseload. You know, technology advances, the caseload goes up much faster than staffing ever will in that department. And we just need to continue to work with the judges and our tech people to keep technology going. And I think that's important.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, and then the next one is legislative, fiscal, and management report from our chief executive officer.
Yeah, as we all know, the legislature and administration have passed once again on the state budget deadline, and so we're now officially in territory we've been in many times in the past, and that is operating a new fiscal year without a state budget. The legislature will be recessing for a period of time and come back in and begin working again in the near term. I'd like to comment briefly on item 3 of correspondence, which is the City of Ceres request. Receiving previous requests similar to this, our process has typically been to return an item to the Board of Supervisors expressing our support for the continued actions of the jurisdiction and not supporting the specific action, only the work of the jurisdiction, and that would be my intent on this particular item as well. It's always a sensitive matter when zip code changes occur. There are a number of winners, number of losers, or I should say a number of people supportive, a number of people defensive in proposed changes. So we'll work with the City of Ceres in supporting their efforts and not necessarily in supporting the outcome.
Okay, that's it.
That's all I have.
Okay. There's an announcement today. We're having a special meeting, and that will be defensive driving and injury and illness prevention program. So today, we're going to have a closed session, and we're going to put the pedal to the metal. And so I guess but that's what you'd call it. We also have a closed session.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Today we have two items for discussion in closed session. The first is a conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. This will discuss one case, the City of Patterson versus Stanislaus County. That's Stanislaus County Superior Court case number 626800. The second matter for discussion is a conference with labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The agency negotiator is Richard Robinson, and the labor organizations are a number of county organizations as listed on the agenda. And we do not expect a report out of either of those matters.
Was that 0.6?
That's right.
Okay. Where's your...